Okay, we are here on the Halo de Zeus Chanukah. This is a by the Hasidim. This is the highlight of Chanukah. By the Litvaks, they also say Zeus Chanukah. Why is it called Zeus Chanukah? Because it's the only day of Chanukah where there's nothing, there's no lighting the Neiris. Just tonight we're going back to regular life. And we're just learning Torah. So Zeus Chanukah, when you learn Torah, that's Chanukah. That's the Litvish version. But either way, it's a very big day. And even if it's not, whether it's the highlight of the Esther of Chaim Kanievsky last year, I don't know if we sent the Shlichus, but I think he held that it was a regular day of Chanukah, which is great. Chanukah is great. But the Hasidim make a very big deal, and they for sure know what they're talking about. It's amazing schus to teach Torah on this day. So I want to do something. I'm wondering if this will take a few weeks. I'm not sure. Maybe 1 or 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks. We'll see. I'm not in a rush. But there's something here in these parshiyos that's very strange. This is what we call parsha fundamentals, which means that anything fundamental we have to really... we have to really get down. And any thinking person has to be bothered by how long this story of Yosef and his brothers is. I mean, how long is this story, right? How many parshas is it in? How many parshas?
Five.
A bunch, right? So any thinking person?
Three parshas.
That's a long time, right? What's going on in this story? This is, first of all, the story has very little pshat understanding. I mean, If from a perspective of Yiddishkeit, right? So we understand Akedas Yitzchak, right? We understand the idea that Avram's told by Hashem to sacrifice his son. We understand all the other trials and tribulations in the Torah, why there are religious achievements. But these dreams of Yosef don't have any type of pshat to them. Imagine telling your brothers that they're all going to bow down to you, and that this is something that's important to Yosef. This is something he's making sure is happening throughout these parshiyos. I mean, why? And it sounds very like a very big mistake politically to tell your brothers that you're taking over. It's like, hi everyone, you know we're a big family. Well, you're all going to be bowing down to me, right? And he does this, and not only does he do this, but after he gets sent down to Mitzrayim, he makes sure to plan this whole process, that everything should be done at its proper time. He doesn't reveal his identity, which was an emotional roller coaster for Yosef, right? There's a lot of emotion going on over here. And he skillfully deals with Binyamin, his younger brother, and sees how they're going to deal with him, and figures out when Yaakov should come. And he has this all figured out, and we're like in the dark over here. What exactly is happening, and why is it so significant that Yosef should be like a king? If anything, it's against the Torah. Why is it against the Torah that Yosef should be acting like a king? I'm throwing it out there. Lo yasser shevet mi Yehuda. Thank you. There's actually a pasuk in the Torah in Parshas Vayechi that the staff of leadership should not leave shevet Yehuda. In fact, this is Zeitz Chanukah raid. Why? The Ramban on this pasuk asked the Kasha from Chanukah, right? Who are the leaders, like we pointed out last time, in the time of the Chanukah? Who are the kings, so to speak? The Chashmonaim, right? The Kohanim. Actually, I have a coin. I forgot to bring it. I hope I didn't lose it, or my kids didn't lose it. I'm choshish that I did, because nobody's been talking about this coin. I'm worried one of my little kids maybe took it. But I have a coin from the time of the Chashmonaim, from Yonasan Kohen Gadol, who was, I guess, the king at the time. And it's clear that this is a problem. In fact, the Ramban writes in Vayichi that they were wiped off the map. The Chashmonaim, there's no more Chashmonaim. You can't find any people from the Chashmonai dynasty. They were wiped out entirely. There was one woman left who committed suicide, and she said, whoever says they're from Chashmonaim are Avadim. It has to do with Hurdus, and he was originally an Eved, and basically they're gone. The Ramban says, why? Because they took the kingdom. You take the kingdom from, which is kind of bittersweet. I mean, you know, we're talking about the Maccabees, and they were L'shem Shamayim. And not only that, the Ramban writes, Chasidei Elyon, V'ilmaleihem Nishtachu Torah V'mitzvos Yisrael. If it wasn't for the Chashmonaim, the entire world would have no Torah now. But still, Hashem is medakdek on tzaddikim kichud asayra, and they should have found a way to do what they were doing without taking over the monarchy. Without taking over the monarchy. But this begs the question, how could Yosef be claiming some type of kingdom over here, right? So let's understand things properly, okay? According to the Sforno, according to the Ramban, Yosef was a Moreid B'malchus, he was a Rodef. Basically, they understood that he was coming to usurp the throne, he was coming to take over the family, and this was not any family, this was the building of Klal Yisrael, and they paskined on him that he has to be killed. And if we make this small in our eyes, like, oh, if I was there, I wouldn't have done this. I love doing that, right? Like, if I was in the Midbar, I wouldn't have complained about the man. I mean, come on, it tastes like everything. Or, you know, I wouldn't have complained for water. I would have waited patiently. I mean, I just went through Kriyas Yamsuf, right? We always try to imagine, like, I wouldn't have eaten from the Eitz Hadass either. Hashem says, don't eat from a tree. There are plenty of other delicious trees, right? We like to oversimplify Tanakh, and it's foolish, because it means that we haven't even begun to understand the Psukim. If you don't appreciate the complexity of a Nisayon, then you lose the Nisayon. So I'm not saying that we always understand, but if you ever think that you would have decided otherwise, then you never even started to understand what's going on. Something over here was very fishy. Yosef felt a need to tell everyone that they are going to bow to him, including his own father, right? And his mother, because that was the shtutz in the dream, because she wasn't even alive at the time, and Chazal say every dream has a little bit of shtutz. But this is clearly a major problem in history, and we have to understand the brothers, even though they're held to task. Before you come to be critical of anyone, you have to at least understand what's happening over here. Here's the final time we waited for this. Avraham didn't have a full family of Klal Yisrael. Yitzchak didn't. Finally, we have the 12 Shvatim, and look what's happening. We have one brother announcing that everyone's going to be bound to him, and he's not even the one who's supposed to be the king.
Yet.
Who said that? What, yet? Wait, do you have a... Are you saying something? Or it sounds like you wanted to say a pshat. Okay. If you do, just blurt it out. It's okay. It's Friday. It's relaxed here. But this is a problem. And this is... What's that? They were the Shvatim. For sure they were. No, they were. It's true he didn't give... That's a good point. Yaakov didn't give them the brachas. However, this was the first time that there was a family without a bad guy. All 12 of them reached a level before the brachas. The brachas were like the way of saying goodbye. Yaakov, when he gave them the brachas, didn't make them the Shvatim. He gave them their power to continue. But really, the purity of each one of them, there was no Esav and Yishmael. Esav and Yishmael were two people that didn't have the raw materials to be part of Klal Yisrael. Esav was a little closer. Chazal call him a Yisrael Mumar. Yishmael was way out there. Esav was very close, and that's what it confused Yitzchak a little bit. Esav's called the Yisrael Mumar. But the 12 Shvatim were there, at least in koach, in potential. For sure they were there. They knew who they were, too. They knew what was going down over here. So, and remember, Rachel and Leah were fighting L'shem Shamayim to build this family. Everyone knew what was at stake over here, was building the Shiftei Ka. So, I'm coming here to just let you appreciate the other side of the story. We're always like, I wouldn't have sold my brother, I wouldn't have thrown him in a pit. No. This is a very serious, cosmic sugya. It's a sugya of the destiny of Klal Yisrael. Where is Yosef coming from? He's a Rodef. And something that I find very difficult in this week's parsha is the Sforno is clear. The Ramban, you could argue, has a nuance of a difference in this point. The Sforno says, even after they started doing a cheshbon ha-nefesh, In this week's Parsha, they start seeing the signs from Hashem that they were doing something wrong. What did they say they did wrong? Does anybody here get to that in Shnai Mikri yet? What did they say they did wrong? The brothers, when they call themselves to task. What's that?
They killed him?
Well, they didn't kill him.
I don't think
that that's the point. There's something here that they say, we'll see it soon. I didn't do Shnai Mikri yet either. I do it on Erev Shabbos, so we're all in the same boat. But what's that? Oh, there's another lashon there that they didn't have rachamim. They didn't listen to Yosef's cry. So what is that? The Sforno says that even when they worked hard to see if they should do tshuva, right? Imagine you try to kill your brother, right? And then you send him off to slavery, okay? And then you're stuck in a situation where you feel like Hashem is sending you a message. So now you think they come around, they're tzaddikim. What do they say? You know, we really should have had mercy on our brother because he was screaming so much. And when someone screams, who's your brother, you need rachamim. That's your issue? That because he was screaming, help me, help me, help me, I'm your brother. Right? That's not the issue at hand. The issue at hand is you tried to kill your brother and then you sold him away. Says the Sforno, no, they didn't change their psak. They were so convinced that they were right, that Yosef was public enemy number one, that they held that maybe there was something wrong with their nefesh, that when Yosef's screaming so much, they should have gone to a plan B. What would have the plan B done? I don't know, but I'll tell you one thing. It would have had to solve the problem. Like maybe put Yosef in like some bunker somewhere with guards around him for years. I don't know what they would have done, what plan B would have been. But look how complex. Me and you would say, hey, I know what you did wrong. You tried to kill your brother and then you sold him. So you see, the brothers, even if they did something wrong, it was so hard to figure out for these tzaddikei elyon that they pasha didn't chop themselves that they did something wrong. That's incredible. The Sforno says this is entirely what they held their problem was. The Ramban is mashma this and something else. But we're feeling the problem over here. We're feeling the problem. And it's going to take a couple weeks to deal with this. But I'm so happy that we're dealing with it, because it's like, how do we go through these parshias? So let's just start like this. What are these dreams? If I have a dream, a lot of my dreams are strange. I never take my dreams seriously. We're in a very funny situation where our imaginations run wild in our dreams. Our dreams aren't worth much at all, right? Chazal even say in the Maseches Brachos that for all intents and purposes that dreams have no meaning, except when they do. But Yosef's dream, says the Ramban, is mashma this way, and the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon said that Yosef held that his dreams were a prophecy. Now it's a game changer. If I'm just having a dream, so then I'm having a dream. But if I'm getting a message from Hashem that my job is to make sure that all of my brothers bow down to me, now I'm getting a call from Hashem. So this is very interesting. There's a din, there's an isser. When you get a prophecy, there's an isser called Kovesh Nivuaso. What's the isser of Kovesh Nivuaso? You're not allowed, when you get a message from Hashem, to keep it to yourself. Fascinating, right? You know, there are people who tried to run away from Hashem. Yonah, right? We know the story of Yonah. He tried to run away. Interesting story there. What happens when you try to run away from Hashem? You get swallowed by a big fish and you get dropped off, you know, exactly where you need to be. You can't be Kovish Nivuaso, it's Aser. So Yosef now is getting a message from Hashem that even though the kingdom is with Yehuda, but Hashem is telling me that I have to be vocal about the fact that I am special. And why already did Yosef in the family have trouble? What made Yosef special that was a little bit of an issue before these dreams?
Yaakov's love.
And I never like to be critical without a chazal. However, chazal say in two midrashim that Yaakov caused the jealousy by giving Yosef this coat. And this was not any coat. This coat already was from Adam Arishan, and it was passed down. Esav got hold of it, and Yaakov had it. Then Yosef got it. This was not a regular coat. This was like, it's not even like a frock. A frock is like, you know, a Rosh Yeshiva coat. This is like a coat that's making a statement like you're the one in the family. That brought about the jealousy. And now, to add insult to injury, Yosef announces, by the way, my friends, I had these dreams. They said, whoa, this is not right. This is not right. Right? So this is the major problem. And where did Yosef test them on this? Yosef tested his brothers by playing with their brother Binyamin. Why? Because if there would have been jealousy in the brothers, where would jealousy come out after Yosef? And why? Binyamin, why? What was it about Binyamin?
Rachel.
What?
Rachel.
Rachel. Exactly. We already know, and don't think the family didn't know this, the famous story that he would... Imagine having a family. Again, this is Klal Yisrael, but still, let's think about it. Imagine knowing you're in a family that one mother, you know, your mother was the second prize, so to speak, and that she was there on the night that your father got fooled. Right? Imagine being part of a family like this, where you know that, okay, Leah is part of the family, but she was the number two. And now, to make things worse, Yosef, who's the son of Rachel, is getting a big coat, a really nice kingly coat, and he's running around with dreams. Okay? Now Yosef's in Mitzrayim. He says, I want to see if the brothers have changed their perspective. What I'm going to do is take the other brother, my brother from the mother, and I'm going to start seeing about their dedication, how they're willing to stick up for this brother. Like, ooh, they want to mess with Binyamin? Phew, we were always worried about him. It's good to take him out of the equation. You see what's going on over here in the story? And it bothers me so much. I'm jealous of you. I'm always jealous of the Talmidim when you get to hear something at a young age that I only knew at an older age. But that's my present to you, that you shouldn't have to suffer like me. But I just want you to appreciate the complexity over here. So let's go over what we have, and we're going to take a couple weeks to figure this out. This has to do with Melech HaMashiach. There's big things that are happening over here in this sugya. But let's just go over the problems. The problem is that it's very clear, like you said, essentially, later in Parshas Vayechi, Yehuda gets brachas. The brachas are given then. But at that point, and people knew it ahead of time, it was Lo Yasser Shevet Me Yehuda. Yehuda was going to be the brother who is the king, and everyone was happy with that. Everyone was happy with that, to an extent. Okay? That was something that the Chashmonaim were in Hanukkah, got wiped off the map for messing with. Okay? So let's appreciate that. The entire family of Matisyo does not exist anymore in history. If somebody says they're an anacle of Matisyo, don't marry him off to your daughter. You know why? He's an Eved. That's what the Gemara says. If anyone prizes himself, ich bin an anacle from Matisyo. Run away from such a person. He's an Eved. Okay? That was all because you messed with Malchus Yehuda. All of a sudden, we have Yosef, right? Who already is behind the eight ball. You'll excuse me for using such a term. Because he's the son of Rachel, who was number one mother, right? And he got this coat, which seems to be a very big statement. And it was, by the way. All these sugyas we're explaining right now, I'll peep shot, are all sugyas in Kabbalah, all of them. They're all really based in Kabbalah. We're just trying to explain them on their pshat level. Now he's got, and now he comes in the name of Hashem and says, I'm taking over. You don't tell the Shiftei Ka that they're going to bow down to you. That's not a good idea, okay? These were people who were all leaders. Each one of the 12 Shvatim was a leader. Imagine a family who's not just... It's true, Yehuda was the only melech, but each shevet in Klal Yisrael is kochos atzumos, right? A few weeks ago, we discussed the cube, the 12 points in a cube, right? That represents the Shiftei Ka. There were 12 splittings of the sea, right? When in Kriyas Yamsuf, Klal Yisrael got a nes for each shevet. This is a statement of who each one of these shvatim are. Each one of them represents a different hanhaga of Hashem and Shemayim. This is not a joke. Okay, now Yosef comes and says, by the way, you know how great you are all? You're all tufel to me. Bowing is not just mean, technically, once in your life, you're going to bow to me. It means, you know all your avodas? You guys all need me. You need me, and without me, you're done. You're done. And as much as you bow to me, you'll be successful in life. As much as you don't, you don't. What? He's a Rodef. He's a Murid B'Malchus. And they never went back on it, we said. Even when they feel like they're getting messages from Hashem, their only taina on themselves was that they were too callous in the cries of their brother, and in Kochos HaNefesh, when you get such screams from a brother, you have to figure out how to deal with them in a better way. But they never went back on this whole plan because they didn't understand what Yosef was doing. Right? And in next week's Parsha, when the dreams are completely done, right? And they bow. And Yosef says, Ani Yosef Ha'od Avichai. The Medrash says that this is the greatest Musar that ever happened. It represents the Yom Hadin HaGadol. Oy lanu miyom ha-tochacha, oy lanu miyom ha-din. It's where you see your whole life flashing before you, where you go, oh my goodness, we thought he was a rodev. We thought that he was against us. Now we see that the entire survival of our family, of the nation of Klal Yisrael, is based on this man. We had no food. We were done. We all ended up here at his hand. And look, we're all bowing to him. This is Hashem. And the Medrash says the only thing that's as scary as this is when we get to Shamayim. When we see like all the lies like in front of us, like it was a lie. Like they're all their cheshbonos, but it took them that much to realize it. If they wouldn't have actually bowed and actually seen how Yosef kept their family alive, they never would have gone for it. Lo Yosef Shevet Miyahuda. So you'll excuse me for spending a whole time here building a question, but that's my whole goal. My whole goal is to put the brothers back on the map, right? It's true that we're suffering and the Asari Hamruge Malchus are a tikkun for Mechiras Yosef. It's all true. However, let's not oversimplify Tzadike Elyon. We don't reach the dirt under the floor of the Shiftei Ka. The dirt under their feet. We don't reach it. So, okay, we feeling this? We feeling this? So, I don't know what the schedule is today. That's the problem. What's the schedule today?
No schedule.
There's no schedule? Okay, so let's start dealing with this a little bit, okay? Let's start dealing with this. There is something over here. There's another sugya that I want to talk about. And for clarity, this we have makaris that are very clear. There's a Gemara in Sukkah about this. There's in the Sifrei Kabbalah, the Zohar is loaded with this concept in many, many places. I have a dear Yidid who's I'd say I consider myself a Talmud of his, but we're friendly, who wrote a whole Sefer on this concept, a fascinating Sefer. There are two Mashiachs. Now, there are two Mashiachs. The Mashiach ben David is not a Chiddush. That's part of the dynasty of Yehuda, right? Yehuda is the king, and he'll also be Malach Mashiach. He's just going to continue his rulership. However, we find a concept. It's brought in the Gemara in Sukkah. It's discussed all over the Zayar. It's a very big concept called Mashiach ben Yosef. Apparently, before Mashiach ben David comes, there's going to be someone named Mashiach ben Yosef. Now, if that's so, now we already see a position of power in the hands of Yosef. All of a sudden, Mashiach means a king, right? If you have a Mashiach, that means he's a king. He means he's a leader of Klal Yisrael. So suddenly, instead of just seeing Malchus Yehuda, we're seeing that in our time, we might have even, there was a discussion whether we had Mashiach ben Yosef or not, whether we will, whether we're going to see it. It's going to be something amazing. Mashiach ben Yosef is like the pregame for Melech HaMashiach. Not using pregame like other people use it. This is my own pregaming, right? The pregaming in the way it's supposed to be, the emes of pregame for Yemos HaMashiach will be Yosef. In fact, I'll tell you something fascinating, then I think we really should stop. This is incredible. There are two brachas that we daven for Yerushalayim Yemos HaMashiach in Shmona Esrei. Which two brachas are the most direct? I'm saying the most direct two brachas in Shmona Esrei. The Yerushalayim and Es Tzemach. You ever be bothered by this? The first bracha, you're asking for Kisei David. the chair of David HaMelech, and then the next bracha you're saying Etzemach David. Like, why don't we just put this all into one bracha, right? This is any thinking person should be bothered by this. No, what is going on? So I'll tell you something incredible. And the truth is, I realized this a little bit on my own, and then I saw that the Arizal takes this home. He takes this home. What's the word Kisei David? What's it mean, a chair? What does it mean, a chair? Let's talk about what a chair is. Why are we davening for a chair? If you take the bracha literally, the first thing you're davening for is a chair and the city. What does a chair and the city have in common? When you daven, Yerushalayim Yercha, Barachim and Tasha, Kisei David, you're davening for a city, Yerushalayim, and you're davening for a chair. Can someone try to explain to me what it is to daven for a city and a chair? And then, in the next bracha, you actually daven for David, for Tzemach David. You daven for David. So right now, I just broke down the brachas, but I didn't answer anything. You daven for a city, a chair, and then in the next bracha, you daven for the melech, for the king. But you need a group of carpenters to build a chair. So we're davening for a chair first, and then we daven for the actual melech to sit on the chair. What's going on? No? I'm almost jealous of you guys that you get to hear this so early. I'm jealous. I'm allowed to be jealous. This is a parsha of jealousy, you know. So I'm allowed to be jealous. So what's pshat? Just in pshat, it's going to change our Shemona Esrei just to hear this aura. Right? Can someone suggest to me what the difference is between davening for a chair and a city and the actual... Why are we doing this development? Someone, logically, don't be afraid. What's the difference between... Why are there two brachas? One for a city and a chair, and the other one for the actual king.
Pre-game and then the game.
What?
The pre-game.
Exactly. Thank you, Max. You never leave me straight. Thank you. Exactly that. You need a world that's ready for Mashiach. You need a chair. A chair doesn't mean a chair. It means a makom to sit, meaning where we can dwell, a city that could represent HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the environment. That's the pregame. That's the environment. Says the Arizal, that bracha of Yerushalayim Yercha, which says Kisei David, is for Mashiach ben Yosef. When you daven Yerushalayim Yercha, you're davening for the introductory stage of Mashiach, which is going to be done by a descendant of Yosef. The next bracha is davening for afterwards. He's taking the baton or passing on the torch, however you want to look at it, and he's actually, Mashiach ben Yosef is supposed to die, Chazal say. He's supposed to die. He has to die. That's another important point, why he has to die. And then Mashiach ben David takes over. So actually, there seems to be a team over here. A team. And if you think about it then, what's the message over here? Can David HaMelech's dynasty, Yehuda, do it without Yosef? No! He can't be alone. He needs somebody to prepare the world for where it needs to go. And this is a major thing that the brothers didn't know about. They didn't understand the context of Yosef's role in history. And let me ask you a question. What names do Klal Yisrael sometimes have? You ever hear Klal Yisrael called Reuven? Shimon, the entire Klal Yisrael. You ever hear them called Reuven or Shimon? I never heard it. You ever hear them called all Levi? Yisachar? I never heard it. I've heard them all called Yehuda, Yehudim, right? The Jews, Yehudim, right? In Masecha, where is the word Yehudim come up the most? Or where do we love it? In the Megillah, Megillah Esther. Yehudim, like Yehudim Haisa Orav V'Simcha, right?
Yehuda.
What's that?
That was not all the other ten Shvatim. That was mainly Yehudim, when it was called.
Ish Yehudi, Haya B'Shushan Abira, Ushma Mordechai, Ben Yair. Ben Kish, Ish Yemini, Binyamin, Ish Yehudi. Nice, Yaakov, right? I won the champion of Shem and Lamor. Just having fun, sorry. Anyway, I want someone to carry me on their shoulders. Okay. Anyway, but Ish Yemini, he's from Binyamin. And he's called a Yid, a Yehudi. It's a good one. Hashem helped me with that one. Watch out for the Shem and Lamor guys. Just relax. Just enjoy the... Just relax, okay? Ish Yemini. State Ish Yemini. Okay. Anyway, where was I? Oh, so what's the other name that Klal Yisrael has, my friends? Ephraim and Yosef, if you look in Tanakh, were called by Ephraim and Yosef. And, to make things worse, where was the kingdom split? When we had Yeravam ben Nevat, who Achia HaShiloni was the one who placed him there. Where was the kingdom split? What's the split of the kingdoms of Klal Yisrael? What? Yehuda, which is a very, and all of Shevet Yosef. It was Yosef. Yeravam ben Nevat is a descendant of Yosef. So we have two kingdoms in Klal Yisrael. Yisrael was always run by Yosef. Shaul HaMelech, who was the precursor to the kingdom of David. Whose father was he? What Shevet was Shaul from?
Yamin.
Binyamin. Ryan, that's our Ish Yemini. Mordechai is an enikel of Shaul who didn't kill Agag, and now Bigil Gulem, he has to do it over by killing Haman. It's an unbelievable, that's a separate story. But he's from Binyamin, who's B'nai Rachel, like Gershon said. So you see what's happening over here? We started with a story that we're like, hey, I wouldn't have done this to my brother. And now we've come into a world of total confusion. Who is the king of Klal Yisrael? What are the roles of Mashiach ben David? What are the roles of Mashiach ben Yosef? Why did the kingdom of Klal Yisrael split into two? Why were they successful, Bichlal? And the plot thickens, my friends, and we will continue this, Bezus Hashem, next time.